Guys, welcome back to another episode of The Pulse. I don't need to explain anymore what we do. Cool people doing cool things in our cool studio. And today, how do we even define you?
I don't know. What do you got?
TV personality.
TV personality, sure, yes.
Fashion expert.
Yeah, style superstar. Right.
Okay. We can keep going, right? You own a horse farm, so equestrian?
I'm an equestrian, yeah.
Are you really?
Yeah, I am. I have a couple world championship titles under my very fashionable belt.
Right.
And that's really my passion, like my hobby,
okay.
Which I love. And
Carson Kressley is here on The Pulse.
That's me. Is that my little camera? It's like a little ghost. Hello.
Yeah, you know, we sneak it in so you just have a casual conversation. Not
I love it.
By it. Appreciate you coming in.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So, fashion expert.
Mm-hmm.
We should have talked before we actually did the segment so you could style.
Right. Like, that would be an extra charge, though, Bill.
It's like that.
No, it's not like that. But I think you look great.
Work casual.
I did see your interview with Billy Porter, and I know you were like going to get some fashion advice from him. And he was like, no, you look great the way you are. And he was like all about like, you know, style is very personal.
Right.
And my opinion is that style is a great way to communicate with people. And it's a form of manners, and it's a form of self-expression. And of course, whatever feels good is usually good. But also, I'm also still a little bit, you know, old school OG queer eye for the straight guy, where I'm just like, we can fix some things. So I help people with fit and color and being brave about like trying things. I was just doing an event at the Devon Horse Show, and a man was like, oh my God, I love your outfit, but I could never do that. And I was like, of course you can.
Just be comfortable.
You can do whatever you want. Like, if you love it, you can rock it. But some people have a skill or they're trained in that field, and they can help people find their personal style and find the best way of expressing themselves, and maybe give them some tips and tricks about fit or color that can empower them even more. And they can say, oh my gosh, I've never felt this great in my skin because of my clothes. So
I feel like I don't know if we've ever done this before. I think we need to see the whole outfit.
Oh, the whole outfit? No, not at all. I thought you'd never ask.
You gotta see the whole.
You gotta see the pants and the shoes.
You got to coordinate.
Yeah, and this was, you know, I don't normally dress like this, but I was at the Devon Horse Show, which is, you know, very, you can be overly preppy there, and it's okay.
Okay,
So
but
I was
with style and
pizzazz. With flair. I'm mixing a lot of patterns here, which is not for amateurs, but it keeps it fun. And that's really the two goals of like getting dressed in the morning. It should be to make you happy, and also make you feel like you can go out and conquer the world. If you can do those two things, you got it nailed.
I'm just trying to keep my job.
I think you look great. Dressed. You have a tie on, which is great. Yeah. Your shirt fits. The collar could be a little smaller.
A little bit. I lost some weight.
Congratulations. but, you know, fit is really, really important. So, you know, just little tips like that.
You're from Allentown.
I am.
That's
an
interesting Allentown, LA, New York. We were saying before we got started.
Yeah,
interesting triangle.
I'm lucky that you know, when I went to Gettysburg College here in PA, and I graduated in '91, and literally like the day after I graduated, I got on a bus and I moved to New York City. I was like the musical 42nd Street, where she takes the bus to Allentown. That was me, and I didn't know which way 42nd Street went, east or west. I was like walking towards the Hudson River, was going the wrong way. And I've lived there basically as a permanent, you know, full-time resident for, I guess it's like 32 years or something insane.
Okay.
And then when I'm filming RuPaul's Drag Race, Barbecue Brawl, projects like that, we're always in California. So I'm there a lot. And then, you know, the Lehigh Valley is so beautiful, and not that many people know that. And I have a beautiful family farm there that we've had for over 100 years. And it is a great escape. It's an hour and 45 minutes to New York City. And it's a really, I think, undiscovered, amazing place to live.
It's great there. I go, for no other reason, I go out there. I have a girlfriend lives out there.
Oh.
Her family lives out there.
Okay.
And Music Fest.
Well, you'll have
so
to come
have to
over.
Go out there. I want to come check
Music
out the farm.
Music Fest is amazing.
It's great out there.
Have you ever been on a horse?
No.
Oh, see?
Maybe as a child, like petting zoo or something.
Right.
But never really.
We'll hook you up.
All right, we're cool like that.
It'll
now
be like an episode of Yellowstone.
Right. So when I'm in Allentown, I'm just
you let
be
me
like,
know.
Oh, I'm in the area.
Slide into my DMs.
Holla at you.
Yes.
Was this Allentown? Was this always you? Were you always this big personality?
No. And actually, I was very, very shy, which I think there's a lot of people who have like big personalities now who like had a shy kind of childhood. And yeah, I was a very timid kid. And elementary school, I was like a little fashion plate. And I got the Calvin Klein jeans like in 1979. And the other kids were like, who are you? And I was like, I'm pretty fierce. And then I feel like in junior high, which is very challenging, especially for a gay kid in the rural suburbs of Allentown, like Amish adjacent is how I would describe it.
Yes.
You could hear butter churning in the distance. And but I learned that if I was the class clown and I had a big personality and I was kind of one step ahead of everybody, I would not get bullied and I wouldn't get picked on and I could kind of deflect. So what could have been, you know, a lemon situation, I made into a tasty lemon margarita, and realized that making people laugh and not being so serious and having a quick wit and a sense of humor could be a great defense mechanism. And that really, you know, it's a lemons to lemonade story of how something that was not fun at the time kind of became a blessing. And it's, I think, the reason why I have a career. So...
But so
thanks, you, haters.
I know, right? So you experienced the haters then, but I read that yeah. You were not out to your family at that
time.
So you were dealing with it in school,
right?
But not at home.
Yeah, and I think the thing, and you know, I've talked to a lot of LGBTQ youth, and I think the common thread growing up, you know, as a gay kid is that if you get tortured at school or bullied or picked on or just made to feel less than or like you don't fit in, you're very hesitant about coming home and sharing it with your family and your most loved inner circle because you're afraid that they won't accept you either. So if you're the tallest kid or the only black kid or the only Asian kid or whatever, you go back to your family and they probably look like you and they understand and they help you navigate those difficult times. Gay kids oftentimes don't have that level of support. So that's, I think, what's different, and that's why I work with a lot of LGBTQ youth charities, because I know that experience of wondering if you're going to be okay, even when you're at home, can be challenging.
And we'll come back to that, because when the queer eye thing all happened,
yes,
you kind of had to face that with your family, too. So the show happens, and
yes,
we're skipping steps.
Yeah,
you become fashion icon.
Yes.
You know, that was kind of your career.
Mm-hmm.
And then was the first big, real public thing, the Queer Eye?
Yeah, I was, you know, living in New York City. Like I said, I just, you know, immediately bolted there after college. And I had a great job working for Ralph Lauren, which I loved. And it's a great company, amazing people. I always tell people it's like the Devil Wears Prada, but much preppier and everyone's very nice. And but one day somebody, one of my producers said, oh, I heard about this show called Queer Eye for the Straight Guy and it's going to be on Bravo. And at that point I was like, what's Bravo? A nonstick cooking spray? I'm seeing like a commercial with some muffins flying out of the pan. And they're like, no, it's, you know, this like artsy kind of network. And back then Bravo was very independent. They had Inside the Actors Studio. And they were looking for a show that was going to kind of rebrand them. Okay. And it turned out to be Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. And we made a pilot in 2002. It was in Boston. I totally forgot about it. Went back to work. And then like a year later, NBC and Comcast, I don't even think it was Comcast at that time, NBC Universal purchased Bravo. They're like, we love your show. We're going to make it the cornerstone of the network. And I was just like, I just want to know if you have dental insurance, which they didn't. But I was able to quit my job because I had an amazing boss at Ralph Lauren. And it was so serendipitous. And I'm so blessed and lucky because my boss, Liz Paley, said, oh, if it doesn't work out, you know, this sounds like an amazing opportunity, but if it doesn't work out, you can just come back. And I was like, who gets that? So we started making the show in 2003, like in March, and it came out in July. And by like August 1st, we were like on The Tonight Show and doing the Ellen DeGeneres show.
It blew up quick.
It was so quick. I don't know how it happened back then because there was no social media, but I guess credit to the team at Bravo and their marketing and getting the word out, but it was almost an overnight sensation.
So tell us, so this is about to happen. You shoot the pilot, forget about it.
Right.
Because a lot of pilots get shot.
Absolutely.
All of them come shows. Forget about it. Then they tell you, we're launching this show.
Yes.
And you're faced, even if it's Bravo at that time.
Right.
You're faced with the fact that I'm now about to be out to
the world.
Everybody.
Yes.
And still hadn't officially had that conversation with your family.
No, I hadn't. And literally, I think the show was coming out like on a Tuesday. We were going to be on the cover of the TV Guide like on a Saturday. And I was just like, I better get back to Allentown and have the conversation, which I did, and everything was fine. And, you know, coming out for people, it's everybody does it at their own time and needs to feel supported. And my family was amazing and very conservative. And so I wasn't sure, but they wound up being amazing and they, you know, have been so proud of me. And but yeah, I waited until like literally like 3 days before the show was coming out.
So and your family was amazing, and I've read that, and
yes.
You've said that.
Yeah.
But why do you think, I mean, at that point, you're at Ralph Lauren.
Right.
You're the fashion icon. You're
yes.
living in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you think you were comfortable having dealt with that before it was, let's announce it to the world?
Right. I just think, you know, I like so many people, I think when you grow up gay in a rural setting, you oftentimes gravitate to big cities where you can kind of create your own life and you find your own tribe. And I did that. I found amazing people who became like my family. They still are great friends of mine. They were literally just at my farm for the holiday weekend. So I have my core New York City group, and they were giving me all the love and support that I needed. So I think it was easier and more comfortable to just procrastinate.
Okay. Until yeah, you announce
let,
it to
let
the
me
world.
Tell you later.
Right. Now I'm on TV.
Right. Then
so
I had
better
to
make that call.
And it was the best thing. Yeah. And I also said that, you know, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, people are like, oh wow, what a great like career builder for you. Like you got a primetime Emmy for your first television show. I didn't even know that was a possibility. But the biggest, best part, well, there are two things. I will still meet people like in their 20s or 30s. The show was out 20 years ago. It's our 20th anniversary year. And I'll meet people who are like, you know, 30 on an airplane. They'll say, oh my gosh, I watched your show with my mom. I didn't know if she was going to accept me. And it made my coming out so much easier. My dad was super conservative. I watched with him. He thought you were really funny. You were the first gay person he ever like knew. And it made my journey easier. So those are the best moments from the show. And then personally, it forced me to come out and be very, very authentic. And so that was a blessing as well. And I tell this story that, you know, I would go to the Lehigh Valley Mall in Allentown and I'd be trolling John Wanamaker's or my favorite stores. And, you know, it'd be like, ew, there's that queer guy. And then after Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, it was like, oh my God, you're the queer guy. So it had totally like reclaimed the word and flipped the script. And that thing that I was embarrassed or ashamed of is now the thing that, you know, you're being celebrated for, which is, it's great, but it was just very like, oh, okay.
That had to be, I don't know if it had to be, I'm gonna ask you.
Right.
That felt, it feels like that should have been empowering, mostly because you weren't playing a part. Like
right.
You were on
right.
TV being you.
Yes.
And out there so open in the public
yeah.
and got that kind of like
yes.
cultural changing response.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing for me. And, you know, and sometimes I give like college graduation speeches where I was like, always be authentic, because even the thing that I thought was my Achilles heel wound up being the thing that was like celebrated. So you never know. So it's always best to be who you're meant to be. It was a really empowering thing for me. It made me feel great. It was incredibly validating. And I'm so lucky, knock on high quality Formica, that I still have that kind of vibe with fans out there that are just incredibly positive and wonderful and lovely.
Did you know then, because it sounds like you know now,
mm-hmm.
you're involved in a lot of things now, did you know then that you were potentially at the forefront of a cultural shift or kind of making things easier for a community?
No. I just wanted to get rid of mullets and pleated khakis. And in that process, of like just being who you are okay. and doing great work. It introduces, for me, like a lot of people came up to me and said, "You're the first like gay person I met." And I was like, "Have you not had highlights? Have you not been on an airplane?"
Right. First one you knew that you
surely met. You've met gay people, but, seeing us just doing our thing on TV, five gay men who were successful and confident and compassionate and had a lot of empathy, it resonated with people and they said, "Oh my gosh, I didn't know a gay person before, but I see you guys and you do great work and you're so kind and you're empathetic and of course you should have equal rights and of course you should be able to adopt or get married or all those things." So visibility on TV is so important, or in any media, or just in your own life. When you're that's the power of being out, is that people see you and know you and say, "Well, you're a great person. Of course you should have all the same rights that everybody else should have." So that's why being out is very important.
It's hard to hate somebody you already like. Now, when you're sitting
right.
there, and you,
yeah.
and then in your case on TV, people knew, but in other cases, you meet this person,
right.
you like this person, you see this person, and then you find out that's the
right.
person who's having to fight behind the scenes just to live.
Right.
It's harder to push against that person.
Absolutely.
Or at least it used to be.
I still think it is, and I still believe okay. in the power of like people knowing each other and connecting on the human level and stripping away all of the "I'm this, I'm that," and you just have one-on-one time, you're just like, okay, we're more similar than we are different.
It seems like it's harsh right now.
Yes.
Is that a backward step? Is it just more visible? You know, is it more of a let's talk about it on TV?
I think it's a combination of both. And I think it's, you know, it's sad and it's upsetting and it's extremely unfortunate that, you know, we're going through this again. I think a little bit of it is just it's more exposed with social media and people are very vocal, and it's very easy to be vocal when it's anonymous on social media.
Yeah.
Certain political leaders seem to be fueled by that kind of hate and unacceptance. So there's that. You know, I think it's also like very cyclical. I think people, you know, go in waves, but we've taken so many steps backward with, I mean, places that are banning books. I mean, that sounds like something from like the McCarthy era, or like the Scarlet Letter, like Nathaniel Hawthorne, like in 1790. So those are really maddening, and it's hard to figure that out. And I think the overall thing that it's a distraction from the real problems that we have in our country. And, you know, for many people, it's working. It is distracting people from real issues.
Well, and it's interesting because it's always, you know, we're banning books that empower the African-American community.
Right.
You're banning books that empower LGBTQ
right.
Plus community. It's interesting that is the thing that people stand on.
Right. Now. Or drag bans. And I understand that some people might not want their kids reading a certain book or mm-hmm. might not want their kids going to a drag show. I totally get it. But they also probably don't want our kids watching certain television shows, but we don't throw the TV out. It's called parenting, and you say, "I don't think this is appropriate for you. I'm going to let you be older," and then you decide. But we don't have to throw away the medium. We don't have to burn books, ban drag in the state of Texas. It's really ways to demonize our community and also, you know, take us backward in time.
Does the shy kid from Allentown embrace or shy away from the fact that you are now being asked about this? You're an activist, which was never really
yeah.
your intent.
I'm not an activist, but you do have to stand up for what's right.
Okay.
And it wouldn't be, it's not even just limited to my community. I mean, I'm a Scorpio and a big fan of Legally Blonde, and I feel like I would have been an amazing attorney. And like on my birthday chart, it says like, "You like to fight for justice." So that's just, you know, what I do. Like if I see somebody like being treated poorly somewhere, I will go over and like get my nose up in there and be like, "Oh no, 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 no. They were first, they get the tip." Like I'm literally that bossy person. So I have to say something. It's just, you know.
So you own it.
Just how
you
I roll.
Understand that responsibility and own that responsibility.
Yeah, I do. It's important. And I think I have a platform and I have a voice, and I think about young kids that are going through this right now, and I'm able to advocate for them, so I should do that. So I would say I'm not really an activist, but I'm an advocate.
Okay. Now, we talked about movies.
Yes.
You know, we've talked about many shows. Mm-hmm. Currently, you wrote a book.
I wrote four books, yes.
Okay. Books.
Books, New York Times bestselling author. I wrote a men's style guide, a women's style guide, a guide that was a companion book for Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and then a kid's book that you mentioned called You're Different and That's Super.
So author.
Author, yes.
Multiple author.
Yes, yes.
Did you ever think...
I'm like Angela Lansbury in Cabot Cove, just typing away.
Did you ever think this was possible?
No.
No?
No, I didn't... I was always very envious of people like in high school or college that were like, well, I'm going to be a dentist. I'm going to go to this school and I'm going to do that for 4 years. I'm going to be a resident and then I'm going to have a practice. I never really knew what I wanted to do. And that was very unsettling to me because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm losing time. And now that I'm, slightly older in my early mid-50s.
Established and mature.
Yeah. And I know what I'm doing. I tell young people like my godson or nieces and nephews, like, you don't have to know exactly what your path is supposed to be as long as you're moving forward and you're doing things that are probably steps along the way, it's totally fine. But, the TV career and writing books and all of that was serendipitous. I just knew that I wanted to work in the world of fashion and style, but I didn't know that it would take me into showbiz.
So what's next? Because I feel like you're doing a little bit of everything
right. Anyway. I don't know, Pennsylvania senatorial race. I live here for real.
Would you
as
get
opposed
into
to some people.
So I don't know if it's a joke or a goal.
It's a distant possibility.
Really?
You heard it here first, America and Pennsylvania. No, it is something I have thought about, but that would be a very, very far down the road. I just love what I do. I think working in TV is so fun. It's different every day. I really enjoy it. It's what I'm good at. And it doesn't matter the genre. I think that's sometimes people are like, wow, you're on a cooking show. I didn't know you knew about food. I was like, I've been eating since I was a baby. I know about food, but I also provide the everyman commentary where I'm just like, oh, that doesn't look good at all. So I love doing those. I love doing any kind of design or style show. I would love to do another home makeover show. That's probably my favorite thing to do.
Okay.
Or real estate. I do love real estate and fashion. And also, I get to work on the most Emmy-winning reality show of all time, RuPaul's Drag Race, 15 seasons in. So that's really fun. And that's always different and always new. And in these weird times where drag is being, I think very unfairly and with no common sense attacked, it's important to be a part of that show too.
We had, and you saw it when Billy Porter was here, said that the thing that was initially the biggest challenge to his life and career is now his superpower.
Right.
And he couldn't be more happy with that superpower. I don't think I have to ask this because you haven't stopped smiling and enjoying yourself since you came in.
I do like doing media.
Okay. You still love this?
I do. When you do like a TV show and stuff, you have to do like a media tour. Mm-hmm. And most people hate it. And they're like, oh my God, I have to get up like at 4 a.m. and go on the Today Show. And I like doing the media more than I like doing the show, usually, because it's like you wear cute outfits, you talk to nice people. So this is, this is fun for me.
Like mostly nice people.
Mostly, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Anybody you talk to and you went, I don't want to do that again.
There's been a couple. Sometimes you have to do these things called like satellite media tours where you talk to radio stations all over the U.S. And sometimes I don't think they know who they're talking to either. Like they talk to a bazillion people. So when it's a shock jock, there's a couple of those that I haven't enjoyed, but not Howard Stern. He's lovely.
Okay.
Well, I know that sounds surprising, but he's the most lovely person.
It actually does. I've never met Howard Stern.
I'm the best interviewer.
Well, he does the work.
Yeah. Well, he's very intelligent, and I've never sat in a chair besides with you.
Of course.
Whispering Bill Anderson.
That's me.
Have you heard that before, Whispering Bill?
Occasionally.
That's a famous country singer.
I used to
from
search
like the 50s
sometimes.
Or something. Yeah.
And I was I was struck by some of the questions I thought people were asking about me.
Oh, yeah.
And it turned out that it was Whispering Bill.
When they were like, do you like the mandolin or the banjo?
And you're like, His latest song represents country so well.
Huh. But yeah, he was a great one. He's legendary.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're having fun with it. We, the whole time, wow, time shoots by. The whole theme of The Pulse is the whole concept of use your voice for good.
Right.
We talk about everything everyone's doing. We're going to get to use your voice for good. But first, you do charitable work. You do advocacy work.
Yes.
What are the things that are important to you?
Well, like I said earlier, LGBTQ youth, because LGBTQ youth are so vulnerable. Because like I said, a lot of times they don't have the support and love of their family, which is incredible to me. And one of the things that I worked on for a long time was the True Colors Fund, which works to make sure that we eliminate youth homelessness. And gay LGBTQ kids tend to be 40% more likely to be homeless than their straight peers. And mostly because their own families don't understand or accept their sexuality and basically say they have to leave their home. So it's a huge problem, but the good thing is that it's an absolutely fixable problem. It's not like cancer or something that we don't even have the resources to fix. We can absolutely fix this problem. So that's been a big focus of mine. I love the Trevor Project and the work that they do. And again, right now when there's anti-trans laws and anti-drag and people think, oh, it's just political. Well, actually those trickle down and kids see that stuff on TV and they think, oh, am I less worthy? Oh, is there something wrong with me? And that, you know, leads to increases in LGBTQ suicide. So Trevor Project does a great work across the board with helping people prevent suicide. They have an 800 number. It's been around since the Trevor documentary, basically 20 years ago. And anybody can call and get support 24 hours a day when they need it.
I respect the whole concept of people who use your voice for good. So I appreciate the fact
that you
do that. I think too many people ascend to a certain platform or level of exposure, and then they become afraid to speak out on the things that need to be, because you're afraid to lose what you've accomplished.
Right.
I love the fact that you will. The actual phrase, use your voice for good, means what to you?
Use your voice for good. I mean, to me, it's just what you're supposed to do. I feel like when you have a platform, and you could be all different, you don't have to be a celebrity, but you might just be somebody in your community that people look up to. I feel like when you have that power, there's that responsibility that comes with it. To me, it's like, and this sounds icky, it's like paying taxes, but it's just what you do. Like, right. If you're lucky enough to be in that position, you know, you should be able to give 10% of your money or 10% of your time or just make the effort to be there for other people who might not be as fortunate or are on their way to being fortunate but need your help right now.
Carson Kressley, thank you for coming in.
Of course.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for the water.
We got branded stuff.
And
we
got
Pulse,
the Pulse
water. We got Pulse mugs and shirts.
Oh my gosh.
We got things.
And I feel like I matched the set.
Yeah, you coordinated.
Beautifully.
Yeah, we planned that.
It was, you know, it's meant to be.
Thank you very much. Guys, thanks so much for listening to today's episode of The Pulse with Bill Anderson with special guest Carson Kressley. I appreciate the thoughtful discussion, the open humor, just the expression. It is, once again, another example of how positive it is when the people that you have seen and thought that they may be positive and nice actually really are. Probably my favorite part of The Pulse. I hope you enjoyed it as well. And if you did, you should hit the subscribe, the follow, the like button, whatever it is, for you to get a notification every Monday when the next episode of The Pulse comes out. Also, head on over to YouTube and search The Pulse with Bill Anderson. You will see that you may have missed interviews with Master P and Iyanla Van Zandt and Coach Dawn Staley and Vivica A. Fox and Bill Bellamy and so many others that you should go and check out. You can hit me on social media. Give me your questions, your comments, your feedback, your encouragement. I love to hear from you. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you that whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.